Good day and welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Marazda. Today we're joined by Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent. Mayor Trent, always good to have you on the program.
Good to be here, Chuck. Thanks for having us.
I know you're getting ready for the annual 4th of July celebration. Actually, it's on the 1st of July this year, Freedom Fest.
It is. We looked at that. This is the third year we've had it downtown, and I've been very fortunate to have a great team of folks from downtown Morehead Incorporated, Tony Pence, of course, Tracy Williams with the Chamber, Joy Brown and her staff with tourism is one of our major sponsors, is the major sponsor to help us in all of our city public works and law enforcement officers, first responders, all those folks make a – and then we also have folks involved with university, Governor Scholar. But what we decided to do after the first year is, unless the 4th of July falls on a Saturday, we try to have it on the Saturday closest to 4th of July for various reasons. A lot of times – you know, 4th of July, if it falls in the week like it does this year, you go to work the next day. You go to work on the 5th. So we want to have it to where the 4th of July can be family time, and it's just so fortunate enough the last couple of years, the 1st and 2nd's falling around the weekend, enables us to do that. People don't have to worry about taking off work. Most folks don't. And it's a natural way for people to get away. But then on the 4th, they can enjoy a nice time at home with their family and not have to worry about being out late going to work the next day. So far, knock on wood, it's worked well for us, and this year is going to be huge. I mean, it's going to be the biggest one we've ever had, and we're expecting in excess of 10,000 people to come to this one.
It's food, it's fireworks, it's a festival atmosphere. You've got music downtown and even some shops, I guess, are open downtown.
Shops are going to stay open. We're going to actually close down Main Street from the South Wilson Police Station area all the way up to past Larry Fannin's, and then we're going to shut down First Street from South Wilson, the end of South Wilson, which is near the corner by the Folk Art Center and the Utility Plant Board there, all the way down until you get to Bridge Street. And the reason we're doing that is this year we're not having a parade. We've had a parade the last couple of years working in conjunction with the Governor Scholars folks, and we just think it's probably – we've got a lot of parades. It's kind of close to the Memorial Day parade, and we also have the one coming up in the fall with the homecoming parade. So we decided to do what's called a walking parade this year. And in working with the great folks at Gravity Falls, Danny Boyd and his group, who put on classic car cruise-ins with money going towards – the Shriners Hospital, we decided to just do a walking parade, which means starting in that area on First Main Street all the way down past Larry Fannin's, we'll have about 300 classic cars that'll be lining the streets. We'll also have music down at the traditional stage. What we have is the Moonlight Stage. MTM has worked well with the tourism. They've now turned that stage, which has been something they've wanted to do for years. It now points up towards Pasquale's and up towards Main Street. We'll have the music there. Four bands will be there. Three of them are actually recording contract bands. The Wooks, which is Jesse Wells' group, which has got a big following from here. Also, Jericho Woods is a big up-and-coming from down in western Kentucky. And then Bang Bang, which is a group that's been started, and one of the lead singers and musicians on that is a local artist, Trista Mabry. So we've got those folks, and then we've also got the group that everyone really liked last year, which was something that you and I can deal with, associate with. Midlife Crisis is the name of the band, which is all retired troopers, and they play 80s cover music, and they're really good, and they run the sound force. But then, to make sure we get cover as many people as we can, Jeff Fannin has put together an outstanding lineup of five gospel groups that will be down near the Kentucky Traditional Music, or excuse me, down near the Folk Art Center with another stage, and they'll be playing there. So we're shutting down the streets at 12. Everyone will be setting up, and the music starts at 4, runs to about 9:30, fireworks at 9:45, and we just hope to have good weather. If we do, we've got plenty of things for people to do.
Just curious, though, the one thing you just seem to be lacking, those carnival rides, have you thought about doing that?
Well, we've thought about that. Now, what we've done in the past, we're on a limited budget still. We're doing all this, believe it or not, on about a $25,000 budget. We were thankful to Dan Markwell and his group at Fazoli's. They are our signature headlining contributor partner, and they, for $5,000, they get naming rights, and they help us a lot of different ways. The $5,000, matter of fact, for naming rights helps us bring in the bands. We get approximately $22,000 from the tourism, which that pays for fireworks, which are about $15,000, and then the rest of that goes for supplies and cleaning and setting up things and doing other things we need. So what we're doing this year, we couldn't do it last year, had it all ready to go, but the winds kept us. If you remember, it was kind of a touch and go whether it was going to rain or not, and had some high winds. We're going to have about 7 bouncy houses, so that's going to kind of replace the carnival rides for this year. Our hope is next year to go ahead and get enough sponsors to have a couple carnival rides. They're about $2,500 a piece, and we just didn't have the budget. So we're going to have, thanks to Jeff Fannin and Good Shepherd Printing, we're going to have about 5 down on the west end of First Street, and then we're going to have a large water slide, inflatable water slide, and another bouncy house on the east end of First Street. So that, with some Governor Scholar kids, are going to help us with face painting and arts and crafts. And we're going to have a train that's been donated, used from the Shriners, a little small train that will circle the train museum and give kids rides there. So, you know, that's the biggest thing. What can we do for young children from 4 o'clock to 9:45? Because they want to see the fireworks. But as you know, you've been on long car trips with young ones. You got to keep them busy. And so that's what we're doing. We're adding stuff each year. And like I said, we're trying to learn from the year before and add for the next year.
Pretty neat. Pretty neat stuff. All right, let's talk a little bit about what's been going on around the city. I know that here recently I had a chance to talk to your Parks and Rec Director, David Morris, about the proposal that was put together by the Morehead Round County Recreation Committee in order to help pay for some facility and program improvements. They suggested, in the city's case, adding to its insurance premium taxes, maybe a couple of those, and then asking the county to start enacting insurance premium taxes that they don't have any right now. And apparently that idea appears to be dead in the water.
It does, as far as the one entity, but they've assured me they will relook at it coming up next year. And this is what I want to explain to folks. Right now, currently, you can have 7 streams that you can have an insurance premium tax on. I prefer to use the word fee because, you know, when you use the word tax, people freak out, like the TIF, you know how that goes. So, but anyway, right now, we currently in the city, we have a 5% premium tax on inland marine, on casualty, and on fire. And what that does, that generates roughly $200,000 a year for us. Okay. Let me give you an example. For Mount Sterling, for example, they have 10% across all 7, and the other 4 are life, health, auto, and there's another one that escapes me, but there's mainly 6. So they've got 10%. You're allowed 15% under the Kentucky Revised Statute, under the law, okay, in the state. Almost every county and or city in the state, the city in that county has this. It's a way to generate income where you don't have to, quote-unquote, raise taxes because it's based on premium. In other words, if you drive a $75,000 Hummer and I drive a $10,000 clunker or $5,000 clunker, you're going to obviously pay more premium than I do. Okay, so it's not a straight across. It's not going to say everybody pays the same amount of money and it's a huge amount. It just depends on that. And we're talking like roughly, if you had something like a $20,000 or $30,000 vehicle, you'd pay maybe $50 more a month just on the auto. I mean, $50 more a year just on the auto. And that's not a lot. But when you add it all together, like Mount Sterling did, they do 10% across the board on those 6 major premium streams. That brings in for them annually $1.2 million. I talk to the mayor every month down there. We have meetings with Gateway Ad, Gary Williamson, and he said, "Mayor Trent, we could not function if we did not have this." Now, their county does not have any because the city decided to go to 10. We were proposing to the county and the city that the county join us with the 3 we have, the city add the 1 stream, which was auto, for 5%. If the county did that and just matched us on those 4 at 5%, the total projected income for the county and city to use for recreation, infrastructure, other things to have another income stream would be over $1 million a year.
You mentioned for auto, it could be about $50 a year.
$50 a year, that's for a $30,000 or $40,000 vehicle.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, and that's what the average person is saying right now, saying, okay, you're going to add auto to your insurance premium taxes, and you're going to be asking the county to do, I guess, three or four of these.
And then, to match us at 5%.
Right, right. So I said, how much is that going to mean to me? How much is it going to cost me? Because that's where it always hits home.
It always does.
Wallet.
Well, right now, I don't have those numbers broken down, but let's say, for example, on your fire and casualty, you'll see that on your insurance when you look at your casualty insurance. You know, just like as you see it, look at your insurance bills, it breaks it down, and these are basically surcharges. I give the example of a cell phone. We don't do that, but I give example of a cell phone. You'll see it's got your basic rate, you'll have your taxes, city, local, and then you'll have, it'll say like a surcharge or something like that. And that's what that would be. The insurance company collects the money, and then at the end of the year, they send that to the entity. The problem is right now, and what I really, me and Dave and a couple other folks on the recreation department really urged council and fiscal court to do is what they need to realize is this has to be enacted before March 31st of each year. Okay? It takes a year to collect the tax. You only get them back once a year. So really, you're looking at almost a two-year process before you see the money. That's why we really tried to push that and said, look, let's get it in this March so that they can collect it in a year and we can be looking for some of that money next year. It's over. It would be over a year, year and a half, where you get the money back. And I can't tell you why they didn't do it. I think everyone is, like we've had a couple folks say, that we don't want the tax increment financing because I don't want another tax. And that's just not understanding the process. And I think anytime you mention that word, people just naturally – you know, they think we're being taxed too much or this and that and the other. But if you look at it, what a small amount it is and what it goes for, that keeps us from ever having to go and raising taxes across the board. We don't want to do that. But this is a way, by using a premium fee, to help that. People can say, potato, potato, mayor, you're trying to do. No, I'm not. I mean, this is the least invasive, the least expensive way for folks to help raise money for things like recreation, bridges, roads. And if you remember, I go back, like I've said before, and I know Dave reiterated it when he was in here. When we did that survey, 11,000 surveys went out. We had 2,000 back, which is a tremendous amount of, if people don't think that's a lot, it is when you do surveys. 75% of the people that responded said they would be willing to pay $50 or more a year to help upgrade recreation. That's why we're talking about this. I didn't grab and pull this out of the air saying, I think we ought to do this. We actually asked the public, and we got the data, and we went to them and said, this is what we want to do. We showed that to both bodies, and for some reason, I can't get inside the mind of folks. They decided not to do it. So I'm not going to quit that road. I'm going to keep pushing it and showing them, and it just enables you to do things that we need done. And unfortunately, things cost money. They have to be paid for. I want to try to look, and my team at administrative office try to look at the least invasive and the least burdensome on the public, and we feel like this is the best way.
So do you make another run at this? Do you come back with a different idea? Where do you go from here? Because you mentioned right now this plan seems to be at least in limbo, if nothing else.
It is in limbo, but we're going to continue. I think it's an education process. I believe when they first brought the TIF a few years ago, people just shied away because of the T word. And it's taken a while to chip away. So I believe if you try to go and try to come at it from different angles and don't put all your eggs in one basket, you will get something eventually, or a combination. So I'm not giving up on this. Our recreation folks aren't giving up on this. And we've got a couple council members who really see this and think it's the way to go. So we're just going to keep working on that. Now, on the other side, we're looking at all kinds of other ways to try to bring them in. We're looking at foundation help. We've applied for every grant we know to apply for. One of them we think we've got a decent shot at getting from the state with the Department of Local Government, the Land Water Use Grant, to try to help us with a new playground, dog park, those type of things. So I have to say this, and only being in the city 2.5 years, it hasn't seemed like it's been that long, but 2.5 years, we've got our police chief, our fire chief, our public works, our recreation director. These folks do more with less than anybody I've ever seen. They turn over every rock. They look at every grant available, and they do everything they can to try to take the taxpayers' money and get the most bang for their buck. And that's the truth. People don't realize how many things we get for the police and fire and public works because of the work those fellows do, and women, to try to get us the best deals.
So are you kind of saying in a way that if you, the public out there in the Morehead-Round County area, want improvements to recreation, you're going to have to pony up?
They're going to have to. It's going to have to be a partnership. I mean, we're going to use taxpayers' dollars, no question, but we don't want to always go back and seem like we're going to raise taxes just for this. But we want people to realize if you want nice things and you want to do that, then we've got a $15 million budget, and $13.5 million of that is accounted for. We've got roughly $1 million that we put in the bank for catastrophes, and we have about $300,000 we use for what we call for we have our budget amendments during the year when something happens, we need a new dump truck or something like that. So we take this very seriously. Somebody said, "Why can't you just take that $1.5 million and buy a pool?" Well, yeah, that'd be nice. And what are we going to do when we have another North Wilson incident where half the road falls in? You know, we can't do that. You got to do things for infrastructure, and you have to have, I don't want to say a rainy day fund, but you have to have stuff there in case of those type of things. So our goal is to maximize what we have and look at ways to add to our recreation and add to infrastructure. People think this is all about, well, Mayor Trent, he used to work for the recreation department. It's all about ball. It's not all about ball fields. I'm talking about recreation. I'm talking about ages 2 to 92. I'm talking about wellness. I'm talking about livability. So we can attract people in here. It has nothing to do with ball fields and basketball goals. That's part of the whole big picture. We're trying to do what we can to make our city one of the best cities for livability and wellness, and we have to have facilities to do that.
Again, our guest today on Front Page, Moorhead Mayor Jim Tom Trent. I'm Chuck Meraz. We'll continue with our discussion right after this.
There are many ways to connect with Moorhead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Moorhead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Welcome back to today's Front Page. I'm Chuck Meraz. Again, we're talking with Moorhead Mayor Jim Tom Trent. And at City Council this last week on Monday, I know that the controversy again with the Lyons Avenue project, for most people who don't know it, most people I guess really do know it, but there's a large dwelling that has been built. It has, I think, 14 bedrooms in it. And there's been an issue between some of the residents in this area and the person who bought this because I think he'd like to rent the rooms out. And the plan was put on hold for a while the city relooked at the situation. And where is everything right now?
Well, when you say controversy, you're right. But I like to look at it as a challenge. So how can we do this under what we know now? We try to make the best decisions we can with what we have in front of us, the information at the time. Before the landowner built the building, there was a 10-bedroom house on that plot. I knew the family that lived there. Unfortunately, there was a fire. The family moved to another place in the state, and that missed the landowner purchased the property. The landowner came in, worked with our then city planner and building inspector, Joe Parson. They worked very closely. He put back a smaller footprint than was what was there before. Now, he went up. The previous building was about a story and a half with a full basement. This building is two stories with a full basement, or half a basement. I guess you'd say it's halfway out of the ground. So, yes, if you look at that, you think, why is there a 14-bedroom house in an R1 district, which is residential, single-family dwelling? Well, there's so many different aspects to this. I'm going to try to break it down as concisely as I can. Number one, what's a family? Is it related folks? Is it friends? Is it, you know, we have a fairness ordinance now that was passed in 2013. Technically, we can't tell you what your family is. We can't tell you who the family, are they all blood related? Are they all have the same? We can't tell you that, number one. So number two, then under a court of appeals decision in the late 50s, early 60s that was researched and found out by our city attorney, it says a similar situation where a hospital, I think it was a hospital's foundation, owned a building that 14 nurses, or actually at the time I think it was 20 nurses, lived in 20 different rooms. It was all under one lease, which meant technically by our, the way our ordinance is drawn up, if it's under one lease, then it's a single-family dwelling. Now, here's the big catch. There's argument about the safety of the building. if it was a multi-family dwelling or a quote-unquote boarding house apartment, then there has to be fire ratings each individual rooms. And that's where the crutch is here. That's where the crux of the matter is. So in a single family dwelling, there are fire protections, and if it falls under your ordinances and it's allowed to be there, then you don't have to have that. So it's almost, I don't want to say it's open to interpretation. It's pretty clear. And once our city attorney went and tried to find all the information she could find and backed up that with a court case, that KLC basically said, you're right. The state said, you're right. We looked at the state building inspector's office. They said, yes, you're right. Whether people like it or not, it's the way it is. Now, what happened was, once that was put up, there was a sign put in the yard back in the spring that said, rooms for rent. Okay. Once that happened, on its face, it looks like, okay, now it's a boarding house because they're going to rent the rooms individually. We met with the individual who owns the property, his attorney, our attorney, and Philip Hurt, who's our building inspector right now under contract, working with our new inspector until he gets his certification. He called his folks. He's had several years in the business, worked at Berea, ran the Richmond office. And once we met with them, the sign was agreed to be taken down, and we asked about the lease. It is still a single lease with 14 people under it. By our rules and regulations, whether people like it or not, the way it's written right now, that is legal. So it is back to where it should have been. He's in compliance. He signed a letter and had it brought it to the office before Mr. Parson would give a certificate of occupancy that says, I promise, basically, that this will stay a single-family dwelling under the – and he signed that, and we brought that up. And it's never changed. It was the sign that was put in the yard that made it look like it had changed.
Is the plan, though, his plan still to rent the rooms?
Well, there's one lease. He rents it to one person. They rent the rooms. You see what I'm saying?
So they sublet the rooms.
Basically.
So, I mean, isn't though, if I'm looking, so well, then isn't it still technically a boarding house?
Well, it's not under our current zoning regs. And here's my next point. I'm leading all up to this. We are in the process, which we've needed to done for many years, is to overhaul our zoning ordinances. As you know, there have been, quote unquote, some exceptions in there. We've got a large mound of dirt located somewhere in West Moorhead area. You know about that. We've got some other things that have been brought up. Well, those things have been checked out per our ordinance against what the state says. Our ordinances cannot conflict with the state or federal. Okay? They are right with them. And the way ours are, they're probably a little bit more broad than they should be. We should have them a little bit narrowed as long as they don't conflict with the state.
So this sounds like you're going to have to go through the entire
zoning
books and say, all right, what are the codes?
We find out
what's what and maybe tighten some and maybe get rid of some others.
We've went in and we've contracted with a group that's going to come in and do a feasibility study and also a study on rezoning or rewriting our zoning laws and regs to make them more modern. And we've already met with them. That will take a place roughly in late summer, early fall. Should have something by early summer next year, and that'll be something that will go before the council. And here's what we have. We've got folks on the council who used to be planning commission folks. We've got planning commission folks that's been in the planning commission for a long time. They all realize this. They see it as a frustrating thing. But right now, technically, if you're against it, you're hamstrung because our laws are like this. It's the way it's written. If you're for it, you're great because you can do this. Our job is to make sure if there are certain things out there, safety is number one. Number one. As long as safety is taken care of, then that's where we will start with all of this. It has nothing to do with convenience. People say, well, the only people that complain about this are the folks that live around it. Well, yes and no. The main thing that I'm worried about, I don't care about people complaining. Trust me, that's part of the job. And I look at safety first. As long as safety guidelines are there, and even though it's not up to a boarding house, quote unquote, it is still up to the safety regulations of a single family dwelling with 14 rooms. That's what I want people to understand. It was done under that guise. It was checked and checked and triple checked. And the way the law is written right now, it is allowed, whether people like it or not. So moving forward, if we want to make changes, this is the time to do it.
It's legal.
It's legal.
All right. Mayor, thanks as always for coming over. Enjoyed the discussion, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent. I'm Chuck Moraz, host of Front Page. We'll see you next time.